Say, kids, what time is it? It's time for another episode of Brio TV, the podcast. I'm your host, Bill Brio. This episode is brought to you by CTV, Hollywood Suite, Paramount Plus, and Super Channel.
Express yourself.
Well, it's not often that a series that is popular in French Canada on Radio Canada crosses over into an English language version, but that is the case with Plan B, a compelling new drama which is on Monday nights on CBC and can also be seen on demand on CBC Gem. One of the stars is a Canadian Screen Award winning actress who is as at home in English as she is in her native French. Her career has also taken her to Hollywood and onto American network TV shows such as Pan Am and Revenge. Her feature film credits include a breakout role in director Denis Villeneuve's 2009 feature Polytechnique. She also starred for four seasons opposite Billy Campbell in one of my all-time favorite Canadian dramas, Cardinal. Besides Plan B, where she stars with Patrick J. Adams from Suits, she's about to start shooting season two of another Montreal-based drama, Avant la Crash. Please welcome Karine Vanesse. How's that? You're still sideways, but I can see you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's...
If I do this?
Oh, there you are. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. There you are too, so...
Okay, good.
Yeah. Well, a little tilted, but hey... We're in that universe anyway.
Yeah, we're all a little tilted, aren't we?
We are, even those who don't know that they are.
That's right, exactly. Well, it's lovely to see you right side up, upside down, any way I can. Good to see you. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, it's so good to reconnect with you and other journalists. It makes me so grateful again for all the coverage you did for Cardinal and all those years. We were really, really lucky to be so embraced by all of you. So thank you so much again. Yeah.
Oh, completely my pleasure, and I'm sure others would agree. We were all very embraced is a good word. We would come and visit you in North Bay.
Yeah.
And feel right at home instantly. So thank you for being so welcoming all that time.
Yeah. No, it was very special. So thank you again. But
my
here we
pleasure.
Are. So it's
right,
good.
Yeah. Do you still miss the veggie takeout in North?
Tuco's Tacos.
Yes.
Yes. I think they closed. I don't think it exists anymore. It was such a special place and so unexpected to find that place in North Bay.
Yeah.
But it was, especially I think for Billy. Me, I was going back and forth a little bit more, but Billy was just always in North Bay. So it just really became his little, it became everything.
Yeah.
His everything, his office, his social club, everything. Yeah.
He loved that place for sure. Well, I'm sorry they closed, but COVID shut down a lot of places like that, I guess. Listen, Karine, congratulations on Plan B. I've watched the first two episodes, very engrossing series, very dramatic, and such a great premise. You must be having fun.
First of all, it's always, I love that format of a six-part miniseries. That's what I like to watch myself as a viewer. Yeah. Knowing the success it had in Quebec also years ago and with the entire franchise, like we discussed when we had that talk with Jean-François and Louis, like it's just so engaging, that concept, that initial concept of, you know, if you were given the opportunity to go back in time, what would you change? If you were given the opportunity not even to go back in time, but just to change something, what would you change?
That's basically the premise right there. People who are listening, it's literally, it stars Karine Vanesse as Evelyn, but Patrick J. Adams, known from Suits primarily here, I guess, he is given this opportunity, literally tearing a ticket off of a poster to change his life, to go back in time and correct a mistake. And he takes advantage of that. It's a tantalizing prospect for anyone who has lived. I'm sure I can think of opportunities in my life I would have jumped down this. Is this something you would take advantage of if you had the opportunity?
I think that's exactly what's so great about aging and becoming wiser, is that you realize how important those mistakes, that we might call them at first, become once you decide to learn from them and adjust a few things. Yes, it seems like a sci-fi concept of being able to go back in time and change things. But, you know, it happens. I feel like it happens every year. You know, we're facing the same kind of situations, the same kind of relationships. And sometimes we just keep repeating the exact same thing, you know.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're all given opportunities to sort of take it from a different angle and position ourselves differently. So all these little lessons and experiences, I cherish them more than I fear them now, as I got, I guess, wiser. So it's easy to want to reject them at first, but then a few years later, when you learn that the aha moment will arise eventually, make you go like, huh, okay, that's why it happened. Yeah. That's what I got from it. So when you try to erase everything and correct everything and make it all perfect, you also, I mean, if we follow Philip's journey through the show, you also base it on, you know, your own perception of what that perfect trajectory would be. But more often than not, it's not really, it's only considering your perception of the moment. And I find it's a very engaging show. I'm really excited for people to see it and realize that it is not a time traveling show. It's really a show that is exploring the human experience. If we were given that opportunity, how would it affect you?
That's exactly right. And I agree with you. I think as I get older, I certainly feel that way, that you come to realize that you're in some ways you're the sum of all your mistakes, and it's sort of how you sort them out or don't sort them out is how we become who we are, you know?
Exactly. So they are important, but you know, at first, yes, you might want to just grab that telephone and call Plan B, but the show shows you that it might not be the best thing for you to do either.
Yeah, it does. Every episode, it just unravels another problem that you didn't think of, and that's life.
Yeah,
it's pretty fun. Now, when this was originally the French language version of this, was this something that you were approached to be part of, or did you know about that?
Yeah, no, not back then. No, I watched it and I got in contact with it only as a viewer when it came out and was released here on Radio-Canada. I think it was 7 years ago now.
Wow.
And found it very engaging. I remember the feeling, how I felt as a viewer when I watched the last episode, that sort of roller coaster of emotion and unexpected conclusion at the end. I feel like we have so much hope for these characters that, you know, Philip will make it right, that he will, you know, yes, he will make it better. He will learn from his mistakes. He will, but no, it's just, it keeps spiraling and she's just in the middle of that tornado, that poor Evelyn. Wow. So
yeah.
I remember watching the whole series in French, and by the end, it's just, you're so exhausted for her. Like, it's just where she lands. So I'm curious to see when people watch the final episode, the sixth episode, hopefully they have the same feeling, because it was very satisfying as a viewer to reach that point of, what? No, it got that bad. But at the same time, it's just, like I said, it's because you hope for the best every time he goes back, every time you can't help but wish for them to, to just have some sort of happy ending or, and it does. Anyway, I don't want to spoil anything, but it's just, that's not how life goes anyway, but it's just, I just find it very satisfying as a viewer. So hopefully, those watching this new version of it will experience the same satisfying feeling.
Then it follows the same storyline as the French language version.
It does. There are a few little changes. I think one of the main thing that they wanted to make sure, adapting it from what was originally done, is really just making sure that we would root for them, that we would see sparks of, that's why they're together. That's what they And I mean, that's life. When you want to end a relationship, it's rarely all bad. Like, and that's why it takes so long sometimes to really be able to make the decision and walk away, because you hang on to those moments of magic that happened in the past and you spread them all over the problems and the relationship, and you just keep hoping that these will be back in the, yeah, in the relationship. But so it's
I think that you do absolutely root for them. That works, you know. Yeah. They're a very handsome couple, and you do see tender moments, and also because they're flawed like the rest of us, you relate to them, and you can understand those intersections absolutely. And
it's interesting because one might think that, you know, we might want to relate to characters that seem perfect and that seem to be like the best version of us. But then, no, you want to, it's so strong and powerful when you really relate to their flaws, like you mentioned. And so I'm glad that you you saw that, because that was the main challenge. You know, we meet that couple when things are not in a good place. And so for the audience to still want to root for them, because that's why you keep watching the show. Otherwise, it's like, okay, whatever. I don't care for that couple, you know. They might just as well walk away from each other and that's it. So to keep that hope alive, that was a challenge. And hopefully,
well, no, you meet the challenge very well. That house that they're in is very dark. Looked like you were in danger of bumping into the furniture in there.
I'm still alive. It's all good.
had you worked with any of these other folks? François Arnault is part of this.
Oh, yeah. No, I had never worked with François before, just like I had never worked with Jean-François Asselin. You know, it's a small community in Quebec where there are so many creators and directors, and like, so we never came across each other in any projects. Aisling either, Maxime Giroux, so none of them. I knew of their work, obviously, but it was great to work with François. I had been hoping to work with him for a long time, so that was good that it finally happened.
Yeah, he's terrific in this. I really enjoyed him. He was on a Fox series a couple of years ago, The Moody's, a comedy.
And, that was shot in Montreal as well, yeah.
Right, yeah. It was very funny. I really got a kick out of that. Jay Baruchel was in that and others.
Yeah.
Pretty cool show.
Thank you for choosing Plan B. State the reason for your trip.
This is going to sound crazy. I feel like I already know you. Firm, this house... You, I'm just so scared of losing everything. If you could go back, change things, would you do it?
And we'll be back with Karine Vinesse in just a moment. A lot of people have been wondering about actress Andrea Riseborough after she picked up a surprise nomination for Best Actress at this year's Academy Awards. Super Channel has that performance on demand all this month with the critically acclaimed independent feature, To Leslie. Riseborough plays an alcoholic single mother from West Texas who wins the lottery and subsequently squanders it all while in the grips of the addiction. Peter Travers of ABC News raves, "Here's to Leslie and to Riseborough for bringing her to life in a demonstration of high-wire acting perfection without an ounce of Hollywood hooey in it." There's no hooey when it comes to Super Channel either. Subscribe now via most cable providers across the country or stream it live and on demand with Amazon Prime Video channels and Apple TV Plus. Well, this month marks the two-year anniversary of the launch of Paramount Plus. In that short time, the service has rocketed from an underdog to the fastest-growing streamer in the U.S., adding a record 10 million subscribers in the fourth quarter alone. They've done it with a unique total household offering. Recent hits have been Top Gun Maverick, 1923, and Tulsa King. Later this month, get set for the new original series, Rabbit Hole, starring Kiefer Sutherland as a master of corporate espionage. He's on the lam after being framed for killing a government official. Damn it, Chloe, get me Paramount Plus. Also in March, watch the Challenge World Championship. The new competition series brings teams together from the US, Australia, Argentina, the UK, and beyond. At stake, a hefty $500,000. All that and more this month on Paramount Plus. Here she is again, Karine Vaness. Your career is fascinating to me because you have so many dimensions to it, working in French and English in the United States and Canada. When you approach your next role, what do you have priorities, things that you always want to do, or do you just take each opportunity as it comes?
I think what I'm the most grateful for, if I look back on the last few years, that opportunity to work in the States, in Quebec and Canada, it's creating opportunities that are so varied. The type of role that I'm being offered, what I can explore, the fact that I can keep just working, you know, it's so easy at some point to just look at it from an intellectual point and just say, oh, you know, I would like to play that kind of character. I would like, yeah. But at the same time, I feel like it's good to be challenged and just be in the movement of it all, you know. And I've been very lucky to go from one project to another with productions that are very in characters that are really different from one another. Plan B, when we started shooting, I was just done shooting a show in Montreal called Avant le Crash.
Yes.
And you know, those two characters' names are, they're both named Evelyn, but I mean, that's it. That's the only thing that you can really, link them together. I like that. I'm proud of that. I'm proud that, you know, maybe I'm being perceived in one part of the industry as a certain type of actress who can take on that kind of challenges. And then, oh, in Quebec, you know, they think that, oh, no, we think she's ready for that kind of role. They just feed off of each other. And it could, maybe from an outside perspective, it could look like, oh, they're like a little, not chaotic, but just, right. But I really work with the people I want to work with. And I want to feel excited about the project. And I really want to feel that I'm not repeating myself. No, you're confirming it. I'm not.
Yeah, I am confirming it. You know, Evelyn is nothing like Lise Delorme from Cardinal, certainly, and other roles you've played. So hats
off. I think that every time I get to work on a Canadian project, I'm just, whether it's in Quebec with, you know, the intention maybe to reach out to a wider audience, because I feel like projects in Quebec could aim for that kind of career more and more with distribution systems that's just opening up to that kind of smaller projects now with a very strong narrative. But every time I get to be part of a Canadian project that can sort of reconfirm our common desire to have an industry here.
Yeah.
That's really important to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Good for you. Your character in Plan B plays the cello. Do you?
Yeah.
So did you learn for this, or were you always a cellist?
No, I don't play the cello at all. No, I don't. I don't.
It looked convincing, you know. You had
great. That's the thing. Good. It worked. No. Don't ask me anything to. No, don't ask me to play anything now. But it was fun. You know, it's always great when you have a little challenge like that, an additional challenge to the actual project. When it's something that you have to, you know, as a cellist, you know, learning to sit like a cellist, there's something that gives you so much insights about the character as well, you know. That was fun to learn, and I'm glad if it's convincing on screen. Yeah,
it is. Karine, you started acting at a very young age. Talk a bit about that. When did you first realize that you wanted to be an actress?
I think my first film was when I was 13 in a Léopold film called Set Me Free, Emporte-moi. That was the lead part in the film. I wasn't expecting that at all. I was doing some, commercials before that. And really what the casting director and the agent were testing was really just, can she act? That's it. Could she talk? And not just say, you know, lays. So that was just a test, basically, just to see if I could be part of the agency. And I ended up getting the part. And that was such a defining experience to really learn from that specific director and experience a set like Set Me Free was. It was just, it was very special to start with that kind of project. And then I think the years after, it was just kind of a, you know, it was easy for me at school. I just needed something else. So it was kind of a more of a hobby, I think.
Wow.
An opportunity to dive into emotions. You know, I was very intense, just like all teenagers, I guess. Nothing really special about that, but
right.
it was just fun for me to dive into, you know, someone else's reality and journey and just, you know, get closer and closer to that feeling of empathy. And so that was great. But then it was never really, you know, when being asked in interviews, like, what do you want to do in the future? I would just answer anything but that job. You know, it was just, for me, it was not a job. But then I went away to study in Greece. And then when I came back, I was part of a movie in Quebec that was, I became a big success called Séraphin.
Yes.
And I was 17, 18 at that time. And I think that's when I really felt not only how satisfying it was for me, but the effect it could have on an audience when scenes are really strong, when people see it, what it can create, you know, other than just the ego thing of just, oh, they think you're so good. No, but what can it create when people come to see you and they start crying because, you know, that moment, that specific scene, you know, I wasn't on stage with them in an audience, but when they were coming up to me, telling me about how it almost unlocked emotional feelings for them watching that specific scene or that other one. I just felt the power of cinema.
Yeah,
and where it takes where it takes an audience, and it's not always the case, but I feel like there's always a little moment somewhere within the project that can be honest enough so that people are hopefully moved. That they can identify with. So I Absolutely. Think that's really when I decided to commit to that job. And then when Polytechnique happened in my early 20s, when we started working on that, developing that film, that cemented also my desire to be part of projects that can really, I mean, they can't all have that kind of depth and gravitas, but they can certainly, you can certainly aim for all of them to be somehow genuinely honest at some point. Yeah.
Well, you know, an example, you had a smaller role in a very breezy Woody Allen film, Midnight in Paris. It didn't have perhaps the emotional depth, but it was certainly a fun time at the movies. Any memories of that? Was Woody Allen, what you hear is that he doesn't really give much direction. Was that your experience?
I mean, it was such an amazing day on set. Actually, it was a night shoot, and all the scenes, all the moments didn't end up making it in the film, but I was in France shooting something else, and I remember how, I mean, I was ecstatic to, okay, I'm going to be part of it. I don't care about the size of the role, and I was really excited by then to be part of it, and then just to witness them. Darius Kanji was the DP on that film. And just to see how he would lit the scenes at night, it was so magical. Like, I had never seen a set so beautifully lit at night with all the resources he had, the technical resources, and it was really moving. So sometimes it's also about, I think it's the experience that the audience will hopefully feel, but it's also just, I like when I remind myself of the chance I have to witness that and all the magic that happens around it. Yeah.
It's a pretty cool
because
business,
it could be,
right?
Yeah. And sometimes, like I said, sometimes it's not working, but when it does work, when the magic happens and when the connections are there, it's good to be reminded of its power. Yeah,
for sure. You were shortly after that, I think, part of a big American series. And I think this is where we probably first met, Pan Am. I remember the cast coming down to the television critics, the TCA meetings in Los Angeles. And that show had quite a cast, Karine, yourself, Christina Ricci, Margot Robbie, you know,
yeah.
some pretty big names. Well, was that a very heady time for you?
I was so surprised. I had just done a very unsuccessful play in Montreal. I just needed to, you know, just push myself and do something different. And it was bad. It was so bad. It was not good at all. And my last day, I remember I had to go to the last show that we had. It was a Saturday night. And then I had to leave for France. I had to do some ADR on a film that I had just shot there. And then Pan Am was starting the next Monday. Wow. And I was so happy. I think Pan Am and Revenge was just about, like, I never thought that those projects would be accessible to me. And it's just, they made me dream. But but in the reality of it, like, it was just, I was so grateful, so happy. And I had so much fun. Like, I watched a few scenes. I watched that scene in Pan Am where I'm kind of tying a nut in a cherry stem. Like, anyway, the character had to do that. And I just found out as we were shooting it that I could actually do it. Like, didn't have to plan it. I could actually do it live.
Wow.
And I could see in my face, like, my own amusement of just like, oh, okay. But that was the feeling. I was just happy. I was there having fun, not expecting much from it, actually. And I think that kind of brought me back to that initial experience I had on that Set Me Free / Emporte-moi film when I was 13, of just being happy to be there and not expecting much from it afterwards. Just being like, oh, I never thought that would happen. It's happening. Wow. That's it.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that tying the stem on the cherry would be harder than playing the cello.
It was much more fun, I have to say. Oh, that's, my God, the cello. But it's but like I said, it's always fun when you have to, when you're struggling with something that's really informative of the character. So that was good. And I think, you know, although those experiences were fun, and I've always been offered really great parts in Canada, in Quebec first, obviously. But even in Canada, I think when Cardinal came my way, it was just at the end of Revenge. And I was coming back to Quebec to shoot a military show here, for which I had to train a lot and had like amazing big muscles. And it was just very different, but I was excited to do that. But then Cardinal came, and, you know, that decision of just going like, okay, do I want to go back to LA to shoot something else like Revenge? Although I had a lot of fun, it was great. The crew was, I was happy there, but Lise Delorme was an amazing character, and I wanted to work with Pods, and I wanted to work with Billy, and it just had that special feeling all around it. So
it sure did. Yeah. You were rewarded with a couple of Canadian Screen Awards for your role on that, and it's a wonderful, wonderful series. If people have yet to see, look up Cardinal for sure. Karine will be back after this short message. Once again to talk to our friend Emily over at Hollywood Suite. Emily, what do you got for us this month?
Well, it's my favorite month of the year. It's Women's History Month, so we've got women in film on our channels. You know, some of your favorite filmmakers like Penny Marshall, Nora Ephron, the Wachowskis, Sofia Coppola, they're all on our channels this month. And we have a female filmmaker from Canada, Chandler Levac. She made I Like Movies, which is playing in Canadian theaters in March. She is programming our channels on March 30th, so you can tune in and see her selections. And as an extra bonus, on March 31st, we are screening the first two episodes of Slasher Ripper at the Review Cinema at 6:45. Tickets are free. Come see the first two episodes before they premiere exclusively on Hollywood Suite in April.
Fantastic. Sounds like a ripping time. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you, Bill.
Well, what's new this month on CTV? First up is True Lies, new series based on the 1994 film starring Jamie Lee Curtis and Arnold Schwarzenegger. This TV version casts Steve Howey and Ginger Gonzaga as husband and wife spies. I'm going to hold out hope that Tom Arnold shows up and makes a cameo. There's also a new Canadian comedy called Shelved. Lindy Greenwood plays Wendy, the head of a perpetually underfunded Toronto public library. She's surrounded by several bookish regulars. Stealing scenes as usual is Robin Duke as library squatter, unhoused Wendy Brown. Finally, look for Sullivan's Crossing. This is about a Boston neurosurgeon played by Morgan Cohen, who leaves her job in America to move back to her family's campground in Nova Scotia. Scott Patterson from Gilmore Girls plays her estranged father, Sully. There's also a handsome and mysterious newcomer played by Chad Michael Murray. Get into Sullivan's Crossing and all the new shows this month on CTV, CTV.com, and the CTV app. And we're back. So, and generally what happens, Corinne, is when a Canadian, a Quebec actress finally moves to LA, that's when they start getting all these offers in Canada. Did that happen to you, or were you always working from a home base in Canada, or did you move to the States?
I mean, maybe Cardinal came my way because of, I mean, no doubt it came my way because of Revenge and Pan Am. But I was always mostly based in Quebec. I always had a place in Quebec. I always, I don't know, like, if it, just like Patrick J. Adams, I feel like he had to reach out for Plan B. Like, he had to tell his team, like, okay, I want to go work in Canada. Is there something that I can possibly dream of? Just what's there? What's out there? Where could I be a part of in Canada that's shooting there? I feel like sometimes when people leave or you work on other things, it's easy for the industry here to think that you're not interested anymore. Like, that's it. You've made it. You're gone. You don't want to go. You don't want to come back. So it's great to see more and more Canadian directors, actors, screenwriters wanting to also just feed that industry that we're trying to keep alive here. Yeah,
that's for sure. You have a little boy, and he must be getting big. Would you encourage him to be, if he showed an interest in acting, is that something you would encourage?
I read the Sarah Polley book recently.
Okay. Right.
And just reading what she describes growing up in the industry. I was lucky enough to meet good people, and I was quite protected also. I feel like I had good people around me, but still, as much fun as it is, you're still surrounded by adults.
Yeah.
So I feel like the reality sometimes of how you fit in could be a little challenging.
Yeah.
Because you're so naive, you want to learn, but then you're the only one who doesn't know much. So what it can create after a while, just that feeling of, I know nothing, I have everything to learn from everybody. If I don't know what's going to happen, if he wants to do that, and I can understand how it's difficult to pull back from that desire sometimes. And I certainly wouldn't try to stop his desire or impulse to explore whatever he thinks might be fun about that, dancing, acting, putting on costumes, whatever it is, I feel like it doesn't have necessarily to be in front of a camera. But I had a good experience, but I know that it can be tough, and it could lead to books like Sarah Polley's book.
Things seem to have worked out pretty well for Sarah Polley though.
She's so intelligent and she's able to reflect on all of it, So you have to be you have to be tough, and you need to have good people around you. So I know my son has that, so I wouldn't be too worried if he eventually wants to explore that option.
Nice to hear. Well, you never know. Now, you've been very generous with your time. I just have three quick questions left. These are ones I always ask. And basically, I'm curious about I know you're so busy, but are you hooked on a series right now? Is there something that you're binging that you love to watch?
I want to rewatch Severance. I did a few acting classes with Britt Lauer, and I was last year or 2 years ago. Anyway, and I was completely fascinated by that actress, and I'm so happy to see that she's getting the attention and the recognition that I thought by then I was hoping for her to get eventually with a really strong project. So I want to rewatch Severance. There's so many series now. I have to take my phone and just go through all of them. I feel like we miss, but it's great when it's being recommended to you from a friend and you just feel the excitement and the engagement from someone. But I watch series too late. I have to watch them in the morning, I think. to get all Severance, the yes.
Severance is on Apple TV Plus, I think. And
what was the last show that you liked?
Shrinking right now with Harrison Ford and Jason Segel, which is also on Apple. And that's a fun show. And we started rewatching Ted Lasso to get ready for more of that. So those are some of the ones. Yeah. Now, did you have a favorite TV show as a youngster when you were growing up in Quebec? Was there something that you would race home from school to see, or you just loved as a child?
Anne of Green Gables.
Oh my goodness, with Sarah Pauly? Oh, not with Sarah Pauly. With Megan Follows. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. No doubt. That was it.
Really?
I wanted to be her.
Oh, so my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I can see that. I can see that. You would not have let anybody dunk your pigtails in the inkwell, right?
No. Maybe I would have, but I would have. It was just, I think it was a good example that I shouldn't let anybody do that. Yeah. She was a good mentor, I should say.
And would you have watched a translated version of that?
Oh, yeah. I never saw the original version. No. Yeah. Megan Follows speaks French.
Oh, did she do her own translation for that?
No. But in my head, no.
I got you.
That's it.
All right. Now, is there anything that you're working on next, or is Plan B taking up all of your promotional and work time right now?
Yeah. So what's Plan B? It's a 6-part miniseries, but it's only, even if the franchise comes back for a second season, it's going to be with totally different characters, just like they did in the French, side. So it's always a new story, always a new storyline, always new characters, always a different situation that someone would want to change and correct. So, I start shooting season 2 of Avant Crash pretty soon, and then there's something else that's shooting elsewhere. We'll see what happens. It's fun. Like I said, I'm really proud of the opportunities that I get to explore now, and also just becoming a more mature actor. I feel like I'm less worried about, oh, will people like that character, will they, and that's also how parts are being written right now. I feel like you don't have to you have to be people need to engage with the character, they need to be they need to want to follow the character and be, but they don't need to like the character. So you can take a little bit more risks. And that I'm really grateful for that. I think all actors right now are just, you don't feel like you need to smile as much. You don't need to feel, you just need to go for it and be as present and involved as you can.
And as real. I mean, it's almost swung the other way where the emphasis is to make the character almost so unpleasant that it's more of a challenge to embrace them. Breaking Bad kind of went that way in The Sopranos, so it's been around for a while. Finally, Karin, do you have an all-time favorite TV theme song?
6 Feet Under.
Oh, good choice. Haven't had that one yet. That's a pretty cool one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Talking about shows that I need to watch again, this is something I feel like that was new back then. It was just so, I feel like it had such a big effect, and we keep forgetting about that show, but it's, I would say 6 Feet Under. Yeah.
It had one of the best all-time last episodes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It did. But the ending, but also to go back to your question, I feel like the, the theme of the, I know it's the first show that I could remember where, you know, it would just give me goosebumps just hearing the beginning of the show. Yeah.
Cardinal had a bit of that when you would see the theme to that series, the snowscapes and everything, those drone shots from high above, it gave that same goosebump effect, I thought.
Good. I like to hear that. Yeah.
Well, listen, continued success, Corinne. Wonderful so to talk to you again, and congratulations on Plan B. Really enjoyed the first two episodes. I'm really dying to find out whether Evelyn also has an opportunity to call the Plan B company. I don't want to spoil it for me or for anybody else, but it's a very intriguing show and it's a great idea. So congratulations.
But thank you so much. Thank you. Excited to talk to you again in the future.
Hope so. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. Corinne is the first to choose this haunting theme from the creepy HBO series 6 Feet Under. The funeral business family drama came from producer Alan Ball and ran from 2001 to 2005. The series' main theme was written by composer Thomas Newman, who's worked on everything from The Shawshank Redemption to the James Bond films Skyfall and Spectre. With 6 Feet Under, he won a 2002 Emmy Award for Outstanding Main Title Theme Music and also picked up 2 Grammy Awards. Thanks, as always, to producer Phil Hong for all the care and flourish he brings to each one of these episodes. I'd also like to thank all of the amazing publicists who arrange for guests to share their stories here at Brio.tv. Thanks also to our sponsors, whose contributions make these podcasts possible. Finally, thanks to you, listener, for finding time to share in these conversations with the people who make the television we love. Please favor us with a like or a comment, or if you're feeling especially ambitious, a review. I'm Bill Brio. Thanks for listening.